The only metric that I truly care about is the trust in our community. Because the more trust that you have, the faster things move and the lower, less things cost, right? And you know, focusing on that and having a community that understands that, which there's no doubt because it's all we talk about, is so critical because it drives everything else on the smart side.
This is the Organizational Health Advantage Podcast with Keith Hadley and James Felton, Principal Consultants at Table Group. They're in the business of coaching leaders to build strategic focus and cultural alignment that leads to amazing results. Welcome to the Org Health Advantage.
Hello, and welcome back to the Org Health Advantage Podcast. I'm your co-host, James Felton, and I'm joined by my good friend and colleague, Keith Hadley. Keith, how's it going today?
I'm doing great. Doing great, James.
Awesome. And we are joined by Cody Thompson, who is the COO of Table Group and a good friend of ours. Cody, how's it going?
Excited to be here. This will be fun. Looking forward to
it. Yes. Awesome. And you have brought in one of our favorite client CEOs, Bobby Herrera from Populous Group. Bobby, how's it going?
I'm blessed. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, yeah. You as well. And Bobby, you joined Pat Lencioni in 2019 for one of the At the Table podcasts, and it was entitled The Best CEO You've Never Heard Of. But now people have heard of you because you've been on that podcast. You've done a lot of speaking events, and you wrote a book in 2019 called The Gift of Struggle. Talk to us about that and where that motivation came from to write that book.
Yeah, good question. So the book released in 2019. It's a simple, palatable, 12-chapter story-based book about my journey. And I align a leadership lesson to different chapters of my story. But it's all centered around my leadership philosophy, which is pretty simple, that we all struggle and that every struggle teaches us something. And that sharing those gifts with others is what leadership's all about.
Wow. That's pretty impactful right there. And you shared a story on the podcast with Pat that I'd love you to just remind us, for those of us who listen to that, but like educate us on what was that first story about the bus? If that's a good segue into your leadership.
Yeah, the bus story, you know, it clearly answers, you know, critical question number one, why do we exist for my organization? I told this story at Table Group's first unconference a long time ago. But when I was 17, my brother Ed and I, we were on a return trip home from a basketball game. And we were excited. We had a big win. And on the return trip back home, we stopped for dinner. And everybody unloads off the bus, except for me and my brother Ed. At that point in my family story, we didn't have the means to play sports and afford dinner. I'm number 11 or 13. I still eat with my elbows on the table. And you know, struggle had been the only consistent theme in my family story. And you know, a few moments after the team unloaded, this gentleman steps on board the bus. He was one of the dads to the other players. And as he's walking towards the back, he razzed me a little bit because my brother Ed had outscored me that night. And then he says something to me that I'll always remember. He said, Bobby, it'd make me very happy if you would allow me to buy you boys dinner so that you can join the rest of the team. Nobody else has to know. All you have to do is thank me is do the same thing for another great kid just like you in the future. And to this day, it's hard for me to explain like that wave of gratitude that I had come over me at that moment. And, you know, I'm 17. I can't see 3 feet in front of my face. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. But I remember stepping off the bus that night. And although I had no clue what I was going to do after that moment, I knew why. Like I would somehow, some way figure out a way to create something to pay forward that kind act to other kids like me who were born on the wrong side of the opportunity divide. And that moment just changed the trajectory for me, changed the course of my life for me. And it gave me a belief that I too someday could make a difference. And, you know, 15 years after that moment, I started my entrepreneurial journey, and it was that moment on the bus that was burning like a raging inferno inside of me that became the answer to critical question number one: why do we exist? And because we believe that everyone deserves an opportunity to succeed. And it was that kind act that just transformed my life on the bus that night that gave me that core belief.
Yeah. Yeah. How I love this idea, because so many leaders struggle with the idea of core purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, they very quickly want to talk about maximizing shareholder returns and things like that. And we're always trying to explain the concept of core purpose. My guess is it didn't take you long to understand the concept of core purpose, but how did your personal core purpose end up becoming embedded into the DNA of your company?
Well, I think that's a great question for two reasons, Keith, because, yes, that story was raging like an inferno inside of me, but I kept it locked inside my heart for the first 10 years of starting my company. And so I also say it was one of my biggest leadership mistakes, because even though I knew it and it was driving everything that I did, I was too afraid to tell that story. And, you know, I share in my book, The Gift of Struggle, how I finally did it. However, I often say that when I finally mustered up the courage to share it, it was the moment that my company started its transformation into a community. Wow. And we started building on this magnetic culture and cohesion that we had as an organization that we're still, you know, building on today and continues to be a very magnetic, high trust culture that we all have narrated together. But, you know, it took 10 years before I finally had the courage to share it. And I think it's important to share that too, because I didn't think that it would matter. And, you know, often when I'm speaking at an event or something, you know, I invite the healthy skeptics of, you know, purpose to, you know, to consider these two scenarios. You know, the first 10 years, we actually, we had grown about, it's a little under 100 million as a company, which isn't bad. We had some great return on luck. There's very fortunate growth. But then after I told that story, and it's been about 13 years since I told it, we've grown an additional almost 600 million. So 100 million pre-story, 600 post-story. And so I invite them to consider whether or not they think it really made a difference. I would say it did.
That's awesome.
I love it. So how do you break down that argument to a leader that they want to quickly come up with some nice sounding words.
Yeah.
But they just don't really buy into the idea of core purpose. It doesn't have to be your core purpose.
Sure.
But just having how do you break that down?
Or maybe, let me just jump in there. Or maybe they quickly go to, well, what was your strategy in the 13 years after the story? You know, like, what did you turn the dial on strategically as opposed to the point you want to make, which is like, oh, this story was impactful.
Sure. Well, I mean, I could very politely disarm that with business facts, but I think the reality of it is that, you know, up to that point, I had yet to realize as a leader that it was my responsibility to give my then company what I call contribution, right? I needed to give them something that they felt they could and wanted to contribute to. And absent of the story that gave me purpose, which was the bus story, they were just making a story up. And we all know what happens when someone makes up their own story. It's usually not good.
Right.
And I had yet to realize at that point of my leadership journey that the people that I was leading, they share three basic desires with me. They want to stand out, they want to fit in, and they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. But because I wasn't giving them that reason of why I was going through this very painful journey of entrepreneurism to create something that could do something special, they were just guessing, and we weren't narrating the chapters together, because, you know, I feel that the story that we tell today determines the chapters we write tomorrow, and then the chapters we write tomorrow are better written together. And so we've just been building on that philosophy since.
You know, I think that's such an important point to hone in on for leaders, because Bobby, very often we're in rooms where there's been leader changeover or the next generation of leadership has taken over and they've lost their why do we exist. So often we're going back to the, well, let's go back to the founder. Like, what was the story? And if they've not codified that and really get, and really kind of baked it into the DNA of the organization, so often it gets lost. And so your point of saying like, hey, I had it and I kind of kept it under wraps for the first 10 years.
Right.
And when we give people the opportunity to connect to the why, and the why is a significant one. We haven't even talked about what Populous Group does.
Oh yeah, we should probably mention that.
Even the very nature of your business is connected to the why, not disconnected. Yeah. And you're providing a bus opportunity for so many people over and over, like thousands of people all around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you do? I think that's one of the other questions, right?
Yeah. That's what critical question. What number three? So, very simple. You know how organizations have a really hard time managing their full-time employees? Well, they have an even harder time managing their non-permanent employees. So we help organizations, mid, large, better manage their non-permanent workforce, which can be very confusing because they're all handled differently across every state in the U.S., and there's all different types of non-permanent classifications. We help them bring it all together and do it more effectively, more efficiently, and started that journey in 2002.
Wow.
And I would, so that I see where Cody was going with the, like, not only is it a relevant core purpose for you, excuse me, but also it's like, this is what we do for other people and help them succeed. So you've got your clarity down. Why don't you share your core values with us too? Because those are pretty impactful.
Yeah. So my community's core values, we have three pillars. We give more than we take. We speak from the heart and we go off the beaten path. And you know, we have just lines and lines of stories that support each one of those values that we continually tell over and over again, from the moment someone is welcomed into our community, and then they learn them and they retell them at different points of, you know, their journey with us. So those are the three that guide our culture code, our behavior within Populous Group.
Tell us a little bit of the origin story of those. Where did those come from? How did you discover those?
Yeah, well, so give more than you take is at the essence of that is, you know, the generosity and the purpose of the bus story, right? And me creating this to pay forward that kind act to other kids born on the wrong side of the opportunity divide. But also embedded in that is serving, right? And serving at every aspect of our organization, regardless of the role that you play, right? So that's a deeply embedded service based mindset that we have, giving more than we take. The speak from the heart, that's all about us being a community that always tells the kind truth. Right? We are very, very rigorous about teaching candor, teaching people how to build trust with conversations at the very beginning of their, you know, climber life cycle with us. That's my term for employees. We call them climbers. And we start teaching that at the very beginning because we want to make sure that they understand that we believe you always want to tell the truth and you always want to have candid, healthy conversations. But we're going to teach you how, because that's a skill set that, in my opinion, isn't taught very well in our homes and in our schools. And so speaking from the heart is just how we expect everyone to interact with one another. And then going off the beaten path, that's all about finding a way when others won't, and figuring out problems to solutions for the people that are trusting us out in the marketplace, and also in the way that we build our internal systems internally, right? I tell every climber that's selected for the Populous Group community, you have one day to be new.
Yeah.
After the first day, we give them a carabiner because of our climbing theme, and on it, it says choice. And so we remind them from the beginning that, you know, you get to choose whether or not you raise your hand when you get that feeling in your belly that says this isn't right. And so that's where they kind of all work together and going off the beaten path. And we want to create safety around that, right? So I know that they're going to believe others before they believe me. That's the way the world works, right? So I have all these other climbers that are constantly sharing examples of that.
Yeah. You know, James, Keith, I hope you don't mind if I jump in. I wanted to share like my first experience with Bobby walking into the offset table group. And there's like a few things, cause you mentioned a little bit, Bobby, but I don't want to underplay any of these things that would be really valuable for leaders to hear more specifically what you do in the culture. But I remember, so like, I love, you know, I get to work for Pat. That's awesome. That's a great perk. I love being in the room. I learned through osmosis, but I started a table group almost 11 years ago. So I was in my late 20s. And I was kind of a sponge for everything that was going on in the office and would go to speeches with Pat. One of my favorite, what I would say is maybe one of the best benefits of the job is just getting an opportunity to be around other leaders in every industry. And because of, you know, Pat's draw, we'd get people coming through the office. And so my first experience is watching you walk into the office. I think you and Pat had already known each other a little bit by then. But then to hear you not only tell your bus story, which was like you had such clarity around your why. And then every time we asked you a question about like, so what do you do with this? And you have this clarity around here's our values. And you were very like, you know, we often talk about how clarity is kind and the idea that like you have specific answers to all of these questions. And then you found a way to infuse some of your own, you know, who you are as a person into the organization. I love, because I think you talk about the climbing thing, which I love, but this is something I've probably told this story on your behalf as much as you have when you're not in the room, which is people often talk about this. How do we bring people into the organization and orient them around the six critical questions? And how do we get them up to speed faster? And I love this concept of like, you only get one day to be new, the carabiner with the number on it, the phone calls and the stories you tell. And I'd even love for you to like talk about how climbing is a metaphor for the way that you're bringing people into the organization. And then for the future of like, hey, you know, you talk about sort of like this Everest analogy, like we're headed up this giant mountain and you play a role in this. So I don't want it to be theoretical. Like I want you to say, how do you think about onboarding? Yeah. How has that become? Cause I know now that so many, you do it so well that people are asking you, can you do it for us? Yeah. So I'd love for you to like tell that whole story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, there's a, I'll simplify it in parts where it's a little bit more palatable, Cody, because I think there's a lot in there. But, you know, ultimately, I learned pretty early on through making a lot of mistakes that, you know, you either welcome people in your organization or you onboard them. And the difference is, you know, when you welcome someone, you invite them into the story and you recognize that they will be the most engaged, curious, and excited about your story in those first few weeks. And if you don't capture them then, you're going to be doing rework down the line. Right? And so our welcome is about doing just that versus a lot of the transactional things that you see in a traditional onboard. Right? And I started doing that around a negative experience that I had at one of the jobs that I had out of college. By the end of the first day, I was asking myself, what am I doing here? Why did I take this job? Right? And so, you know, but it's part of a bigger story to your point, Cody. You know, I love the mountains. And so I built a theme into our whole organization around that passion, right? Because I've always believed that, you know, to build a culture, the culture that you want, you have to do three things. You have to build identity, guide behavior, and speak a common language. And I used that passion that I have for the mountains and mountaineering to use a climbing theme to do just that, right? Hmm. I call my employees climbers. They get a climber number when they join the community. And so they know where they were on the mountain when they started. And that helps them tell stories to other climbers. We give them that carabiner with choice. We do a lot of symbolic theme things that have traditions around that theme. And you know, as part of our human systems around the welcome, we make sure they know the bus story. We make sure they know, you know, all the different critical cultural stories that have happened throughout our journey. But one of the things that we do that's unique around it is we started what we call a culture quiz a long time ago, right? And so when a climber is in their first week, we will give them a roster of other climbers within our organization, and they will call them to hear the stories on that culture quiz and have conversations. And the whole intent behind that is to reduce anxiety from that first week of entry and to create relationships versus and create allies versus creating unintentional competitors, right? Starting a job is stressful. And this also allows me to institutionalize the culture because they're telling the stories over and over again and they're learning it. And it's not just relying on me.
Yeah. So interesting as you hear this. I have in the back of my head just all of the reactions that I know people might have as they hear this. But when are you going to get to the good stuff like strategy and execution and how do you track? What are the KPIs that you use to track performance? And it's like,
yeah,
there's something about the way you're describing your culture that I had the feeling that you're also focused on that stuff, but that stuff starts to take care of itself when people have a strong sense of identity. They feel like they've connected with other people at the company. Mm-hmm. They have a clear sense of what they're supposed to be doing and where the company is going. My guess is that you are welcoming people who very quickly become fans of the culture.
Yeah, very, very, very quickly.
Yeah. We always think about probably the best testament of a good onboarding, traditional onboarding program or experiences. What do they go home and tell their spouse or their kids or their parents? Because everybody knows they had a new job, but that's a big deal. Like, I'm just curious your reaction to that. Like, what do people go home and tell their families about what they just experienced in your company?
Well, you know, Keith, I also have a little bit of healthy paranoia around that too, because one of the things that's very important to me in that first, you know, month or so of that relationship life cycle, when we're introducing them to the culture, to the story, and they're excited, you know, within month one, I will have a welcome call with all of the climbers that have joined within, you know, that 1 month, 2 month period. And I always ask them this question. I always ask them, did you have it all figured out at the age of 23? And of course I know that it's a rhetorical question, but I do that to politely remind them that, hey, we're real proud of the foundation that we've poured and everything that we're doing, but we don't have it all figured out. So this is where you come in and you have to help us narrate the chapters that we're writing, right? So as proud as I am of what we're doing and how we're doing it, I also want to make sure that we have a mindset of humility around, you know, knowing everything that we need to know, because they're bringing forth some good ideas, right? So what I want leaders to hear within that is these people that you're welcoming in the first month, how safe they feel in that first month or so is going to have a direct correlation of how much better they're going to make everything else that you're doing, which impacts the smart side of the house.
Wow.
Right? Wow. So we're doing all that stuff on the healthy side to create more trust, create more safety. And all that does is amplify their voice. And then they'll look at the stuff on the smart side of the house and they'll be like, well, this is weird. Why do you do it this way? Why don't you do this? Right. And
This might be a hard question. Oh, go ahead, James.
Well, I was just going to say, like, to connect the dots, because that fresh perspective can be helpful. And it's something that if you don't have humility as somebody who's been there a while, you might either get defensive or just tell them, like, hey, that, be here longer before you give us some ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but the fresh perspective is really nice.
I will intentionally tell them on that welcome call, you were selected, not hired, you were selected to specifically make our story better, right? So I want to hear back from you next time we connect on how you're doing that, right? So
so much of this seems to be coming from who you are as a person. I'm wondering, how do you get your leadership team, your next level executives, middle management, how do you get them on board? Because you can't be everywhere, or maybe you are. Maybe you do all this all by yourself.
Oh gosh, no, gosh, no. I'm an organizational nightmare first and foremost, Keith. None of this would happen if I didn't have the people on my team.
How did you scale this? Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I was thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. I remember you said earlier, like, you know this. Mm-hmm. You expect your leaders to know it, mm-hmm. and you expect them to be able to teach it.
Mm.
Yeah. Talk to us about that. Where did you set that expectation? And, you know, it's not, you're not hiring leaders to just be smart side leaders, mm-hmm. to be intellectually smart, but you're talking about culture leaders as well.
Absolutely. I think I started that journey. They actually give me a hard time now, and they love to tease me about it. I hosted my first leadership meeting around all of this. It was around 2011. It was pre-bus story, me having the courage to tell the bus story. Huh. You know, they already knew I was a big student of organizational health, and I was reading a lot of stuff, and very rigorously, in a clumsy manner, trying to apply it myself. And so over time, they started, you know, seeing me model the cumulative effects of it. But one of the biggest mistakes that I made, you know, I often say that, you know, discipline number three over communicating clarity is the unsung hero. I've told Pat that I believe that is the unsung hero of all the disciplines. I wasn't very good at that. And once I figured out that was the unsung hero, and they heard me do it over and over and again and again, and then just drive them crazy with it, my leaders knew that, hey, if I cascade something to you, I expect you to cascade that to your team. And I expect that leader to cascade it to their team. And, you know, we were talking offline, we're on our 15th rally cry. And every Monday we cascade to the organization what we covered on the rally cry call.
And oh, wow.
We expect everybody to know it. Everybody in the company knows the cascade every Monday. Yeah.
So you're actually doing two things that you're doing cascading communication, but there's another nuance that you described that I would love just to emphasize. You're also doing what we call a cascading expectation.
Absolutely.
It's like, hey, I'm telling you this and I expect you to tell somebody else. You know, like if you can't cascade that expectation and then follow up and make sure it's happened.
Right.
Bobby, how do you cascade the thematic goal to the rest of the organization?
Oh, good question.
Your Monday meeting.
Yeah. Well, you mean the actual rally cry or what we covered in the
both.
Well, now I'm going to say both. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me answer the weekly one. The weekly one.
Okay.
You know, obviously we'll leverage technology. We'll use Teams, but then we also make sure that it's covered in my leaders' weekly meetings. And you know, sometimes we'll, you know, my leaders will have just an ad hoc meeting with their leaders, and then they'll go off and cascade it to someone else. Right? We're imperfectly consistent. How's that? So we'll use different ways. But the actual rally cry itself, every December, I host my rally cry meeting with my executive team. But starting in November, is when I expect them to reach out to their leaders and their teams and capture their voice. So when we get together in December, they come with the voice of their ecosystem. And then we'll do just like I'm sure you all teach. We'll throw it all up in a big amoeba. You know, we'll assess where we ended that year's rally. We'll pull out all the themes from that one, come up with our new rally cry. And then I host our climber summit. Well, then we'll cascade it to the whole organization after that meeting. And then on the first week of February, because January is a mess for everybody, right?
Yeah.
We will get together at our climber summit, and I will fly half the organization to one location. And for 2 days, we rally around the rally cry and the defining objectives. Half of us from every part of the ecosystem have our meetings on exactly how we're going to get to green on every one of those DOs.
Wow.
And then everybody goes back and we reinforce it every week. Every week, every quarter.
I just want to jump in one more time because I think this is so fascinating.
Yes.
Okay, Bobby, name the consultant that worked with you. You have none. I'm not trying to undersell what these guys do.
No, but I
think it's just like really compelling to hear someone who read the books, implement like even the language you're using around the smart side of the house and the over communication and CRO stuff and the way that you're bringing the organization together to rally around the rallying cry. I mean, all of that, I think, should send such a like great message to any CEO listening to this to say like, you know, half the time we're sitting on the other side of the table saying like, you don't understand the impact that this can have if you get everybody rowing in the same direction. And here you are saying, you're sort of screaming on your side of the table, like, no, it's even bigger than you think, you know, like it's way more incredible than you think.
Right.
And just the ways that you found to make it sticky in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tee up one other thing that I remember all those years ago, or maybe a couple before we're done here. But because when you said, Keith, you asked, like, what do people say when they go home? I remember going home and telling my wife, babe, I know I don't work at this guy's organization, but he gives away this award. I'm going to have to go work there just to try to win this award once a year. Because once a year, you give away the Sherpa Award. And I'd love for you to tell about, because this is a great way of discipline for how do you reinforce all of the clarity in the way that we reward and celebrate people. And I met a couple of your Sherpa awardees, and it's maybe the one award out there. I'm going to have to come work for you for a handful of years, see if I can win that. I'd love to hear you share that.
I actually just announced this year's winner. I'm super proud of her. So we have the mountain theme, right? And anyone in the mountaineering community knows that some of the best climbers in mountaineering are the Sherpas, you know, the guides on Everest and so forth. And so the Sherpa Award is, you know, my version of the Heisman, right? It's given out to the one climber in PG every year that best represents our purpose and our values. And, you know, who we are, who we're becoming, and, you know, what we believe. And I make the final selection, but all the previous winners submit their nominations along with my exec team. And so usually their voice tells me everything I need to know about who I'm going to select. And, you know, I take it a step further. Part of that winning that award is I take all the alum and that year's winner to a new location every year, just a surprise location. And we invest 2 days into our culture on capturing their voice on what we're doing well, what we need to do better, what we need to do differently. And, you know, also celebrating that year's winner and making them feel loved and appreciated for how well they modeled the culture for us. And yeah, it's one award a year. It's a pretty coveted award, and it's a great gathering.
Bobby, 10 years ago, I think you climbed to a certain point on a mountain and ate chicken. Is that changed?
Well, that's a different tradition. That's my rank. Okay. Yeah. I have a climbing, the one Cody's referring to, it's my annual trip to Mount Rainier, to Camp Muir. Mm. I will hands. I will. My executive team will send me nominations, and they get a couple of nominations each of climbers who are, you know, modeling our culture, who are making an impact beyond themselves, beyond their team. And I will hand select six people, and I will take them on a, you know, less impact, very challenging day to Camp Muir on Mount Rainier, my favorite mountain. And it's a, you know, it's a 9-hour up and down, but it's a way to symbolic tradition to bring our climbing theme to life, but it's separate from the Sherpa trip. Okay. It's just, it's another tradition.
Yeah. I love that.
Cody, I'm glad you mentioned, you know, Bobby's done this as an extension of who he is as a leader and books that he read on his own. And you know, we often are talking to companies that are saying like, how do we do this? And we've tried so many different ways of trying to say something along the lines of, you know, it's just not that complicated.
Yeah.
It's really hard and you have to really want to do it and you have to do it on purpose. And it's like every story that you're telling, Bobby, I'm having this reaction of like, that's so obvious, but nobody does that. And I think everybody would think, well, it's got to be more complicated than that. Well, you know, how do you pick a rally cry? It's like, well, here's what we do. Take notes. We talk to people.
Yeah.
We find out what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we get together and we decide what's most important.
Yeah.
And then what do we do? Then we tell everybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, so how do you do that? What do you mean? How do we do that? Like, do we just do that? It just seems so simple and so obvious. And yet, I mean, you would probably attest to this. It's harder than it looks.
Yeah, my observation is, it's simple, it's not easy. And my observation over the years, the most challenging part for us has been maintaining the consistency, right? I mentioned offline that I believe consistency on its own is a form of greatness. And everything that we're doing here has been cumulative. You know, all the human systems that we have, from how we select to how we welcome to how we develop, they've all been just cumulative voices of everyone who's contributed to it over the years. And that's where I always encourage leaders. It's like, if you want it to happen in a year, don't even start. But if you want to build something beautiful, magnetic, fulfilling, that is going to outlast you for, you know, that's going to outlast you by 100 years, then start the journey, but stick with it. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I think, leaders unintentionally get discouraged. I know it's not easy. You know, it's simple. It's not easy, but it's that consistency part that, I think is hard for a lot of organizations. But if you stick with it, oh, it's so fulfilling. It's so rewarding. Getting some of the feedback that we do, both, you know, good and bad, over the years to make it what it is today has been a blessing.
I will say one other thing, Bobby, that you represent, you know, in the beginning of The Advantage, when Pat writes about the sophistication biases,
right?
You just naturally embody a leader who's not enticed by those sophistication biases. Yeah. And when we talk about that, it's like the adrenaline bias. You just said that, like, hey, if you think this is going to happen in a year and get to the level that you guys are at,
right,
it's definitely not true. The right quantification one, show me the ROI. I mean, if I teed you up, you'd probably say like, I don't know, it's everything. You know, like, I don't know how to separate that from the success of the business.
I can't.
And then the quantification, like, did I do those wrong?
Yeah.
No, that's right.
Quantification.
And so like this silver bullet thing, I will say the notes that I took as that young 30-year-old that watched you walk into the office, one of the things I wrote down, I pulled this up before we started the podcast. This is probably like a 9 or 8 year old note that's, I just wrote, the stream always wins. And that's what you just alluded to. That's your phrase about consistency.
Yeah.
And so, I'd love for you to just, it's an extension of what you just said, but I think it's worth even going deeper on.
Yeah. Well, Cody, embedded in some of what I shared, you know, when you said it's everything, you know, the only metric that I truly care about is the trust in our community, because the more trust that you have, the faster things move and the lower, less things cost. right? And you know, focusing on that and having a community that understands that, which there's no doubt because it's all we talk about, is so critical because it drives everything else on the smart side.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, what I also want to be cautious of is downplaying how challenging it can be too, right? Because, you know, you have different kinds of thinkers. You know, we have everyone take the working genius, you know, in their right. first part of their welcome, which is where I think everything starts, right? Mm-hmm. Everything starts for your organization and how well you welcome and really evaluating that, because from then on, you're just building on what you accomplished in that real critical part of the relationship life cycle, right? And, you know, Cody, to your point on some of these things that we're doing, we've just tried to keep a real simple incremental progress view on it, right? Like, okay, are we a community that is better today than we were 6 months ago? And what do we have to do in the next 6 months to be better than we are today? And then just rally all our energy and time and focus around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. That's so good. I know this is going to sound obvious, but mm-hmm. You really seem to have doubled or tripled down on disciplines 3 and 4.
Right.
Throughout the organization, mm-hmm. you know, over communicating clarity, reinforcing clarity, and building trust throughout the community. And you know, Keith said some of this stuff is simple. I agree. And yet politics can get in the way of a Sherpa award,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's like, oh, you know, now we're singling one person out and, you know, there's some animosity that's created, and some companies don't do something like that. But that trust that you've built up throughout the organization, throughout your community, mm-hmm. clearly, like, people are supporting each other and propping people up. And it's something where, like, you're listening to other people talk about people in the community and they want others to win. And you don't always see that in organizations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure you agree with that.
1,000%.
Discipline 3 and 4 is huge for you folks.
Yeah, no doubt.
Bobby, what if you care to articulate, what have been some of the biggest benefits that you've seen as a result of really taking the health of your organization seriously?
Well, one, I'll reemphasize having, you know, what we consider world-class trust as a mm-hmm. community, right? Which drives everything. You know, the other has been just seeing the fulfillment that we're having as a community, living out the purpose, right? Because ultimately, I think that we all want to feel like we're making a difference beyond our role. So that's been very impactful. And then also just the empowerment that I've seen people really experience. Yeah, I'm really vocal in our community. Like, there's very few things, you know, I'm talking about them and I'm sharing them with you all, but just about everything that exists for us within discipline number 4, our human systems, I didn't come up with them. Someone else did, right? Mm. So seeing them take pride in, seeing my community take pride in, you know, narrating this story with me has been very fulfilling for me personally.
Wow. Wow.
Bobby, how many people, I think you might have even called them employees at year number 10. How many employees or climbers did you have at year 10 when you thought, I should share this bus story?
Gosh, boy, you're dusting off the cobwebs here, James. I think at the time we probably had, we were like less than I'd say we're probably around 75 ish.
Okay.
Yeah. And then.
And how many now?
About 350. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
great growth.
Yeah.
My point being is, you didn't found the company with these principles in mind, all laid out.
No, everything but. I mean, those first 5 years, we were talking offline, were the most fun I never want to have again. You know, it wasn't until I started, you know, studying. Someone gave me the Five Temptations of a CEO, a mentor of mine back then, and I read that, and I was like, "Oh, I can do this!" Like, I'm like a clown. I'm like walking through a minefield with clown shoes on with a business, but I can do this. Yes. And then Pat came out with The Advantage. Thank God, because I felt like that was a, you know, that was a playbook that I desperately needed. I mean, yes. I still flip through it. Right. I have all of his books right over here, but, you know, repetition's a mother's skill. We just kept reading it together, reinforcing it together, you know, and we've done so many rally cries that just over the years we tweak it. Right. I was in the military. And so one of the things that I took from the military is, you know, we debriefed everything. And so as a community, we debrief everything, right? We debrief our you know, like Climber Summit, we debrief our traditions, we debrief the Sherpa meeting, we debrief it all. And so, you know, I've interjected my own philosophies into all of this, but it hasn't been without the voice of a lot of other people that have helped me.
I don't want, it would be easy to say that you just founded this company with these principles and it went from you to five to, ten, you know, but actually at 75 people, that's some mindset shifts, evolution. Yeah. And most of the clients we work with are at some point needing an evolution. And it's good to hear that that's what you did as opposed to just founding the company on these principles.
And, you know, to Cody's point earlier, you know, we've remained a tight, small, lean community of, you know, going from, you know, 75 to 350, in the 300 range. But our consultant base, we have a massive consultant base representing our company at different organizations across the country. And, you know, in some cases globally, but like that population is the one that's grown significantly. And over the years, we've continued to try to find ways to have invite them into our story while they're working at other customers. Right. So,
Oh, that's great. That's great.
We've done such a good job of talking about the culture and what makes the company great. I just want to give you an opportunity. What is it that your customers love about you that your competitors are jealous of in terms of like your go-to-market strategy? Like what is true of Populous Group? As maybe that to round out your bit of clarity here.
Well, that may be a better question. I'll give you their number. That may be a better question for them than for me to answer. But you know what I am most proud of in terms of their voice, you know, what my community has been able to do. The metric that I care about second to the trust score is our voice of the customer score. And you know, for 2 years running, we've had a voice of the customer score that is more than three times the industry average. So what they're telling us is that when we trust you to help us, you treat us better than anyone ever could. So I'm very, very proud of that.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
I would speculate maybe they'd say something like that. I would hope they would because, you know, they're telling us to do that.
Yeah. Well, as we round out our time, what would be just a piece of advice that you would give a leader who, like you, you know, has a desire to build a healthy organization, but also like you in the earlier years, you know, is struggling to pull this off? What would you say?
Well, I would encourage them to go back and listen to the part about the Cody reference that the stream always wins, right? So I'd provide encouragement that, hey, stick with it, right? Consistency will be your form of greatness. I would encourage them to zoom out and look at how well they're welcoming people into their community. Because, you know, a principle that I've had as a leader in my community is, if you start right, you end right. And so I've found that how well you start your leaders, the people that you select for your company, is a significant indicator of what they will do for you the rest of the time that they're with you. And so I think that welcome part and really evaluating that is a point of encouragement that I'd want them to consider zooming out and just really reflecting on it and evaluating it and say, hey, where could we really refine this to make a much bigger impact?
Yeah. Probably a good spot to close us out. Bobby, thank you so much for being here today with us and sharing these stories. Cody, thank you for joining us and sharing your insights as well. Cody, awesome to have you back. And James, as always, has been fun.
Absolutely.
If you're listening, you know, consider sharing this with somebody you know, consider liking this, and we'll see you next time on the Organizational Health Advantage.
Thanks for listening to the Org Health Advantage. Your hosts, Keith and James, are helping leaders change the world of work and invite you to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. For more resources on building stronger teams and organizational health, check out tablegroup.com.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.